Views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Bob Dio, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass, and we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show to kick off the last full week of June. It's June 24th, 2019. You're listening to 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. All of our podcasts are available for you 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. The live line number, if you'd like to join in, first of all, with our face-off today, the live line number 790-2040, our Monday political face-off today features our team of commentators, John Munger, Tucson attorney, former president of the Arizona Board of Regents, and former Republican candidate for Arizona governor. Jeff Rogers, also a well-known Tucson attorney, former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. Gentlemen, how are you today?
Great day.
Good to see both of you. The Monday Political Face-Off, sponsored by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors. I've had those done for our home and came out beautiful. He's got some great art, too, at the gallery and shop. Of course, he does picture framing, hanging services, and hanging systems, which means he will come out to your house, take care of everything. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Jeff, did you do anything special this weekend? And compared to the last couple of summers, hey, this ain't too bad, as they say.
Well, it gets pretty hot if you get out there in the middle of the day.
But that's true.
I tend to get started real early.
Mornings have been nice.
Mornings are very nice.
John, what about you?
Oh, it's delightful. I think the high today is 97. Something like that.
Yeah, I think we're up a little bit. Yesterday was 97, but still, you can't beat that.
Beautiful golf game. It's just great.
Yeah. And Jeff, we talked a little bit about this last week when you were here with Bruce Ash. I want to get John's feeling on this. How does President Trump, now as he is officially announced for 2020, how does he expand the base?
Well, I'm not sure he can expand his base. He has stuck to this sort of hardcore base support, and his rhetoric and his politics and policies, appeal to that core group of supporters, which represents something like, I think I looked today at the Real Clear Politics rolling average, and he's got a 44% approval rate with 52% disapproval, but that includes a few polls that are pretty highly unreliable, including the Rasmussen poll, but some of the polls have his disapproval numbers as high as 57%. So, I mean, unless he can somehow, he's going to lose the popular vote next time around by a lot more than he did this last time. But so unless he can kind of engineer a victory in the Electoral College with putting together some states with narrow victories like he did with Michigan and with Wisconsin and Pennsylvania last time, he's going to have a similar strategy, maybe put Minnesota, which he only lost by 1.5%. Points. So, he's going to have to win that way by appealing to voters in individual states, because his overall disapproval rating is just unbelievably bad. He's the first president in polling history who has never broke 50% approval rating once since he became president.
How can he win, John, with these kinds of numbers?
Well, I have a number of things to say about this. I'll try to tick them off, Bill, because I know you don't want me to monopolize the conversation.
Yeah.
But number one, Jeff's talking about approval ratings. I've seen Trump. There was a poll out last week, and it wasn't Rasmussen. Showed Trump at 51.
Really?
I can't remember who it was. So the polls are all over the place. Number two, the polls that are being taken right now are all registered voters. They're not likely voters. So in some states, you have current polls of registered voters showing Trump 9 points behind, say. When you get to likely voters, he'll pick up at least half of that. Number three, Trump will have a turnout of people that are not even likely voters. That's what happened last time. He got voters that the pollsters never poll because they are not likely voters. And so he's going to do fine. He's expanding his base already. In this last week, he's had a very good week. He showed good moderation. People have said all along, oh, he's a warmonger. He's far from a warmonger. The Democrats don't know what to do about this guy that doesn't want to go to war. It's the Democrats who want to go to war now. And the American public is saying, look, Trump avoided going to war over this Iran shooting down the drone.
So you're saying his restraint was to be commended.
Yeah, and the public likes that. And that the other thing that's happening is there were a lot of never-Trumpers in the last election, but those never-Trumpers have seen the light. And most of them are, not all, but most are saying, hey, this is a really good guy. And I don't know why I didn't vote for him the first time. I'm sure as heck going to vote for him the second time. Number four, who's he going to run against? We don't even know who he's going to run against. How can you say that he's behind in the polls when you don't know who he's running against?
When you don't know who his opponent is.
And that's right. And when he hasn't had a chance to sell his programs versus what they're proposing— this race is wide open. I take issue with Jeff. He's going to win this election by a majority of the popular vote.
Wow.
Wow, that's a bold prediction there, John. I hardly think so. There also have been head-to-head polls with him and Biden. Biden shows up as beating him soundly. Even Bernie Sanders shows up as in the polling as beating him soundly, as do three or four others in the polls. And one of these last polls was a Texas poll that showed that he would only beat Biden by 1.5 to 2 percentage points within the margin of error of the poll if the election were held today. So, I mean, when you can basically put Texas in play, I'd be pretty worried if I were on Trump's team right now.
I will
applaud him for standing up to Pompeo and Bolton on this Iran thing. I really thought he was going to attack
and standing up to Pelosi.
Okay, well, she didn't want him to attack. She called and asked him to postpone these kinds of things.
No, you're talking about immigration. On the Iran war, too. The Democrats are very upset because he didn't go to war.
No, why would we be upset? We don't want him to attack Iran.
Pelosi, we think the time is still ripe for diplomacy.
Pelosi
has said that he should have gone to war. So,
I don't recall reading that anywhere, John.
I read it. So, here's what's interesting. There's a lot of ways for Trump to win this election. I saw an analysis the other day where if the Democrats take back Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, and everything else remains the same except Trump turns Virginia just for one state. Trump still wins.
Wow.
Yeah, I think Virginia is practically a hardcore blue state now, as is Ohio's pretty much a red state. And they were both toss-ups before and could go either way. But I don't think Ohio could be won by Democrats, and I don't think Virginia could be won by Republicans.
Well, Virginia has a Republican House and Senate.
Not for much longer.
Well, they do, and... And the fact of the matter is there's a lot of ways for Trump to win this on the electoral vote, but his base in the popular vote, his base is expanding because he has shown restraint, because he's shown he's not a man to be feared, and because the public loves his agenda, and because the Democrats are going crazy on these spending programs and all of their wild programs that the public knows we can't afford and they don't want anyway.
Jeff, it's going to be very interesting. The first debate is this week,
this
right?
Wednesday.
Yeah. So this is going to be very telling whether or not the Dems try to beat up on each other.
They're going to have to.
You've got
what's their choice?
20 candidates.
Yeah, it's just
what's their choice?
I hearken back to the 2016 election when in the early polls, what was the most the Republicans had on a stage at a time? Well, they had sort
16.
Of the undercard.
I think 16.
16 at one time. Yeah.
16.
And we saw how that was. It was just not much intelligent things get said in a debate with that many people, and I'm expecting the same kind of thing.
I don't know. You had Rand Paul and Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush going after Trump pretty hard. And the Democrats, look, if they want to beat out Biden and Warren and Sanders, they're going to have to come on hard. And they will come on hard. Everybody said the same thing about the Republican debates, and they turned pretty vicious last time.
They might turn vicious, but what I'm saying is you don't get into any very serious policy discussions because, you know, it's basically a battle of the sound bites. And, I think it's unfortunate. I think if it were me, I would have winnowed this down a lot further and made a higher percentage number to get qualified for
the debate. Well, I can tell you, you've never run a party. I've run the Arizona State Republican Party. You can't winnow it down. They've got to have... they've got to let everybody hear their opinion, and they've got to have 20 or 22 people up there in some formation.
Well, if you limit it to people who were polling at least 2%,
right?
You'd knock off about 8 or 10 people right there.
Well, okay, yeah, now you're down. Now you're down to 15.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is that the Democrats are going to get vicious. It may not be a big policy debate, frankly, because all the Democrats agree with each other on these wild-eyed programs, but they're going to start ripping each other, and that is fodder for the general election.
All right. It's the Mo's is proud to sponsor our Monday political face-off today with Jeff Rogers and John Mungers. And family-owned and run since 1985, Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at mosgallery.com. Have you been up to Mona's yet for their new breakfast that they've got all fired up and ready to go at 6:30 each morning? Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's located northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. So many wonderful things to choose from now on the breakfast menu, and breakfast is served pretty much all day. Of course, they're open for lunch right now. How about a great sandwich on that bread that came out of the oven just a couple of hours ago at Mona's, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, monasdanishbakery.com. There's also a link at buckmastershow.com. There's a link to actually all of our partners are listed there. We're so proud of this great lineup of people who've been supporting us. Some of them legacy sponsors since we went on the air with the radio show back in 2011. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on celebrity cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the Monday Political Face-Off today, featuring our team of commentators, Jeff Rogers and John Munger. A story that it got some publicity. I mean, it was a front page story in the New York Times, but not, I would say, a lot, but it's pretty darn important, John and Jeff. There was this historic hearing on slavery a week or so ago in the United States, at the United States Capitol. And basically, it's opening the door to some kind of a dialogue about reparations for African Americans. John, your thoughts?
Well, I have a number of thoughts. Again, I'll itemize them.
You please.
Number one, it's been 150 years, 3 to 5 generations. They're not, just so the public understands, they're not talking about writing checks to people. What they're talking about is more government programs. My response is, number one, are we going to have government programs for the Chinese who are Shanghai'd and brought here? Are they going to have more government programs for the Hispanics? Are they going to have more government programs for anybody else? How about more government programs for the families of the men who've died in our wars? I think it's ridiculous. We already have and are spending huge amounts of money on all kinds of programs, free medical care, free education, free housing, just out and out welfare programs. We already have a vast amount of programs for people, including the blacks, largely the blacks in some cases. We don't need to be spending that money. We already have the programs. This is a feel-good thing.
All right. Well, let's let Jeff weigh in on this. Jeff, well, is it a feel-good thing?
Actually, it's more limited than John indicates. This was a bill that would basically create a commission to study the issue. It's not really to even far enough along to say we should even pay reparations of any kind. But I was reading in the New York Times this last weekend an article about this reparations, and they said that it's all President Johnson's fault, the first President Johnson. Because of what happened was Abraham Lincoln and General Sherman promised all black slaves would get 40 acres and a mule. And they actually started passing out mules and 40-acre tracts on the southeast part of the United States. Well, then the president was assassinated, and President Johnson, who took over, rescinded the program and gave the land back to original owners. So, you know, this was something that was promised way back then. And so there's a lot of people who suggest, well, you know, maybe we should follow through with that. They've even gone so far as to study the issue and say, what would 40 acres and a mule look like today? and one of the economists said, well, if you count it as a family of four, and then you right, take the value of that 40 acres and a mule, that it would be somewhere between $80,000 to $120,000 per person today of the people who were affected by that. But, you know, it's a real, I mean, it's slavery didn't just end overnight when the war ended. I mean, what happened was we went through Reconstruction, we went through the Jim Crow era, we went through, you know, poll taxes, we went through all kinds of other vestiges of discrimination against African Americans that went on all the way, you could legitimately say, through the 60s. I mean, de jure segregation and such. So I think it's worth taking a look at and studying, but then you've got all kinds of problems about who qualifies. Well, President Obama wouldn't qualify because his father was not a slave. He's not a descendant of slaves. And as Oprah Winfrey recounts, she says she's a descendant of slaves. Well, I would argue that, you know, perhaps she doesn't really need any reparations.
Well, and so, I think the other question is, the other question is, who pays?
Well, yeah,
my family's a good example. I've got a family book that goes all the way back to 1639 of all the Mungers who first came over.
Oh.
There was not a slaveholder in the group. In fact, a Corporal Munger was the guy who served in the Union Army that captured Jefferson Davis, personally captured him.
Wow.
Down in Alabama. Huh. So my family has never had any slaves all the way back to the progenitors. They were heavily abolitionist, and they fought in the Civil War and lost lives. Now, does my family pay for that?
That's actually an interesting point.
Yeah,
who should pay? Should it just be the descendants of the people who actually own slaves?
Yeah.
Or should it?
It's ridiculous. It's nothing more than an effort to get the black vote into the Democratic Party. And interestingly, 50% of the blacks in the country are against this.
Really?
According to a poll I've seen. Yes. So it's an effort, it's a campaign effort by the Democrats to win over the black vote. They're trying to buy more votes, which is what they always try to do, and it's going to do nothing but divide the country. It's a crazy idea,
right.
And if you're going to do that for the blacks, what about all the other people who should get programs? What about the tribes?
All right, let's see what Joe has to say. Joe called us 790-2040. Joe, what do you think about this issue?
Oh, this is just red meat for Republican conversation. You know, how can you just like, how can you say that, you know, oh, throw up our arms, you know, we don't have to do anything. Everything's been done. This is done. You can't do a capital study. There's a lot of suffering in the black communities, and nobody's going in and measuring true unemployment, true capital studies, true redlining for selling houses, true just economic conditions. You guys are just like running away from this. But the Democratic Party is very weak on this, to be said, too. You know, there is no economic study done in Ferguson and of what's really going on. But here's the problem. What you guys are missing, John Munger, is that you're not doing any capitalists any favors by not analyzing who doesn't have capital. Half of this country makes $30,000 a year or less.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Mr. Munger.
Well, I understand half the country makes $30,000 a year or less. What's the answer to that? Is it socialism or capitalism? And the answer is, it's capitalism. Capitalism, people have no historical context. Capitalism has made this country the most wealthy country that has ever existed on Earth. And in the process, in the past 50 years, has made the world wealthier than it's ever been. I remember back in the 50s and 60s, the Chinese were dirt poor. India was dirt poor. All the countries, there were about 20 countries in the world where the people had anything. And it has been capitalism that makes it great. Now, what Trump has been doing is he's been creating jobs in those communities by bringing back manufacturing, which the Democrats said would never happen. You had to, as Obama said, you'd have to wave a magic wand to get manufacturing back. No, you don't. You need to set the parameters right, set the regulations right, the tax systems right, so you can create jobs, and that is happening. And that is why Trump has picked up something between 10 and 15% of the black vote around the country in the past 3 years. And the thoughtful black people are seeing it, and they are starting to say, hey, this is the solution. Yeah, but the $30,000 doesn't apply just to blacks. It applies to everybody. So are we going to have reparations for everybody?
Jeff, what do you think?
Well, Joe has a good point there. You know, capitalism, pure capitalism, leaves some people out. It just passes them behind, and they fall through the cracks. And so some kind of regulatory capitalism is what we have achieved, although the wheels are starting to come off of that regulatory capitalism as of late, mostly due to Republicans in Congress and the Trump administration. But the fact is that right now, John, as a matter of fact, all indices of manufacturing activity are slowing down. Manufacturing is slowing down vastly over the last 90 days, as well as indices that show what business investment for future manufacturing, those are going down as well.
Yeah, but Jeff,
and the readjusted numbers for the first quarter of this
going
year.
Going down from a huge pickup.
Well,
Trump picked up. Obama said it would never happen. Trump picked up huge amounts of manufacturing jobs, and your complaint is that is slowing down. Well,
it is slowing down by vast amounts, as is the job growth.
It is not slowing down from the Obama
years.
Which is
one more reason why he's not going to win, because he's going to be
sitting
still
there speeding up
at the beginning of a recession and running for his re-election.
Let me respond to Joe. Joe, the black unemployment rate in this country is at an all-time low. What has caused that? It's the Trump program, not the Obama program, who'd given up on manufacturing and creating jobs. And we were at about a 1.8% gross domestic product. Now we've got over 3%. And the blacks have been some of the ones who've benefited the most. The Hispanic, black, and black unemployment rates are at the lowest in history.
All right, John Munger, thank you very much. John, good to see you. Jeff Rogers, always a pleasure. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming in.
Thank you, Bill.
The Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Moe's located at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. I take all of my framing requirements over to Moe. He always does such a beautiful job. They look like they're ready to be put up on the gallery walls, wherever. He does such a great job. All right, coming up next, this new idea about, we all know about burial or cremation. What about composting of human remains? That's next on Buckmaster on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Join hundreds of other Arizona businesses who have chosen to put kids first. The Corporate Tax Credit Scholarship Program's deadline is June 30th. Eligible businesses will receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit. IBE, a school tuition organization, is ready to help. Talk to your accountant today. A one-minute application to IBE and we take care of the rest. IBE works with over 290 diverse schools, awarding 95% of all corporate donations to low-income and disabled students. Deadline, June 30th. azcorporatetax.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. Or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Monday edition, last week of June. Not too bad compared to the couple of Junes of the past. Temperatures have been pretty good. It's going to have to really heat up, though, and it will this week. And that's a good thing in a way because it will bring on the summer rains. This portion of the Buckmaster Show, presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We send so many of our listeners over there taking the three-hour drive, and they all come back and say the same thing. Bill, I had a great time. They start usually at southwestnewmexico.org, finding out about great places to stay and so many recreation opportunities. And here's the good news. It's cooler over there because the elevation, anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000 feet, so you know you're going to get some nice cooling. As a recent piece in the New York Times points out, for most of us, there are two main choices after death. Burial or cremation, but now residents of Washington State have a third legal option. They can have their bodies turned into soil. The new law allows the practice of above-ground decomposition, making Washington the first state in the nation and likely the first place in the world to explicitly allow human remains to become compost. The Reverend Father Robert Hendrickson is the Buckmaster Show contributor on faith and spirituality, and this has Father Robert written all over him when I saw this story. Father Robert, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, I actually saw this story while I was on vacation. I thought, I'll put that aside. This is going to be a good one for Father Robert's next visit. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing great. You and I both were away in May. You were over in the Holy Land leading a group, and from what I saw on Facebook, everybody is pretty darn satisfied with the trip, right?
As far as I can tell, you know, so it was the first time where I've had my family on a trip that I've led as well. So we had our boys there, and it was great. And it was wonderful to see the Holy Land through their eyes. So that was wonderful.
You didn't get any new tattoos?
I did. I got two new ones. Yeah.
Whoa. And I know you prefer, well, you like that kind of the tattoo place that's been there since the Crusades.
Yeah, since the 1300s, the same family.
Yeah, same family's been doing these Crusades type, never, I guess they're not Crusades type tattoos, but they know what they're doing, certainly. All right, what's your initial impression about this composting of human remains? When you first saw the story, what did you think?
Well, I'll tell you, my mind was taken back to, I lived in China for a while and was in Nepal not too long ago. And when I was in China, we visited historically Tibetan areas. And one of the practices there is called air burial, sky burial, where they'll put a body out and let it nature take its course. And a part of that is that they don't have soil to bury in. There's not very much wood to burn a body. But there is something really quite moving and lovely about this idea of sort of a body, you know, as we're reminded in Scripture, remember you are dust and to dust you shall return. Mm-hmm. There's something about those elements that make up the physical body going back to make up the physical elements of new life. So that's where my mind initially went. And it's, for me, I think that it brings up questions, you know, the Catholic Church opposes this. On the grounds that it doesn't treat the body with enough dignity.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if there are ways for us to step back and sort of say, well, what does it mean to treat a whole person with dignity, not just a body, but the person's wishes, their whole life experience? And what does it mean to have a good end, a sort of a funeral where what is raised up is how we're going to be a good ancestor for the next generation. So I think it raises all sorts of questions about this. And it's frankly questions Americans aren't that comfortable being asked. And, mm-hmm. and I have a very concrete example of this. My wife and I were having a conversation with my mother-in-law. And my wife said, kind of exasperatedly talking about end-of-life planning, my wife said, well, if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, wouldn't you want to know what my last wishes were?
Right.
And her mother said, well, honey, your last wish would be that you didn't get hit by a bus. You
know? That's for sure.
Well, we're not comfortable. We do everything we can to deflect from these really hard questions about what does it mean to have a good end and a good life that leads to a good end and all of that.
Ingrid has called us at 790-2040 and would like to join our conversation. Go ahead, Ingrid.
Yes, it might sound a little gruesome here, but if you're going to have a composting of human bodies, are these bodies going to be dismembered, and will they be exposed to wild beasts who may develop a taste for human flesh? Where are these composting sites, and who can have access to them?
Ingrid, I think that the plan is, and I'm looking at the New York Times article, and there's an artist's rendering of a human composting facility. It's a company, actually, Father Robert, that's doing this called Recompose, and the company plans to be ready for business next year. And just looking at the rendering here, this is a fully enclosed building, so it would not be like animals would be able to come in.
That's been my sense, yeah. And I think anything like this would trigger so many concerns, exactly like the ones that the caller raised,
yeah.
That I think they would have to be carefully managed and sort of carefully approached from let professionals sort of take this on as rather than just sort of leaving up to amateurs to make all sorts of mistakes.
Father Robert, how are tastes, if you will, in burial changing, and that you have just seen since you really got into the ministry?
Sure. Well, in my first parish, which was in the Northeast, I did maybe two or three cremation funerals over the course of 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, I've only done one funeral with a body present in 3 years.
Wow.
And so that's a huge difference. And then part of that is cultural practice. Part of that is norms. And I think some of that has to do with the desert and the land versus the availability of land in other places. There are lots of things there. And what I notice is the impact I think that having in some way that I worry about is that it becomes harder and harder for us to confront and have closure with the reality of death. Because when a casket is there, when a body is there, there's a certain kind of presence that is acknowledged there that's different. And I think that it's neither good nor bad, but it does, to me, raise some questions about how do we achieve closure when it often seems like we're trying to avoid the reality of what's happened.
You think part of that might be regional? You said in the East that you didn't do the cremations as much. Think there may be some regional component?
I think some of it is regional, and uh-huh. I think up there there are, it's heavily influenced by sort of Italian Catholic practice and other sort of Catholic practice that do involve a long wake and a casket being there. So some of it is, I think, regional variation as well.
Do you think this might catch on, this composting?
I don't know. You know, I'm becoming less and less comfortable with trying to predict what will catch on in the world. But I think that there's...
You're such a trendsetter, I think, that you need to tell us.
The question for me is will... What I would like to see catch on is deeper conversation about what an end looks like.
Right.
You know, and I think that when we're having those conversations with an end, with clear-eyed, non-anxious eyes looking at our end, we begin to think about what does our present look like and what does it mean to live toward an end that we would be proud of, and how do we become the kind of ancestors that we want to be. And so I think those are the conversations I would love to see catch on. Now, whether this particular practice is it, I don't know. But I think we need to have a culture-wide conversation about what does it mean to live a life that moves toward an end that we can be proud of.
I think that's a very good way to put it, because so many of us don't want to talk about death. We find it so scary. It's something we in many cases, we really, it's out of our control. For folks who are control freaks, this is something we all share. We're all going on the same path, Father Robert.
Yes. in fact, my five-year-old yesterday asked, well, when am I going to die? So I think it's a natural human impulse to start asking those questions. We had a cat die last summer. And so he's been getting these helium balloons and he goes out in the yard and he lets them go up in the air. We didn't know why. So we asked him, why do you keep letting these balloons go? And he said, well, he wants the cat to have something to play with mm-hmm. in heaven. Mm-hmm. So it's a natural question we start asking. And at some point we get afraid of the answers. At some point in our life, we begin to get afraid of having a deep conversation because that makes us face some really difficult things about our life and some hard realities. And we have an entire commerce infrastructure built around denying death. I mean, look at how many health machines and how many sort of potions and unguents and ointments are sold so that we can pretend we're younger yep. and that we're not facing an end. And yet it's all there. And I think that the sooner we can achieve a place of peace with that, the sooner our lives will begin to manifest that peace, I think.
All right, Father Robert Hendrickson, he's the Buckmaster Show contributor on faith and spirituality. He is also the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. Always good to see you, Father Robert. Thank you, sir.
So much. Thank you.
All right, coming up next, Keith Rosenblum, our contributor on Mexico. ICE raids, are they coming? We'll talk to Keith what his take is on that right after this on Buckmaster.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Monday edition on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Have you been over to Green Things since Zocalo became part of the Green Things family? Zocalo, all that great merchandise, much of it handcrafted from Mexico and Latin America, and there's some European items as well. The five shops at Zocalo Village make a very nice destination for you at Green Things. Get all your plants and some great furniture at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. It's greenthingsaz.com for more information. President Trump has delayed a nationwide immigration sweep that would have deported thousands of people living in the United States illegally, including families, saying the president saying he would give lawmakers just 2 weeks to work out a solution for the southern border. Let's welcome now Keith Rosenblum, a guy who knows a lot about our southern border after serving as the Arizona Daily Star and Arizona Republic border correspondent. He's been covering the border for many years. Keith Rosenblum, how are you, sir?
Bill, thank you for having me. And also, probably what's influenced my views on immigration and where I learned the most, actually. I mean, reporters, you see things day to day. But sometimes you miss out on the bigger picture. You see things right at ground level. But actually, the 2.5 years that I worked with Jim Colby, the congressman, the 10-term congressman, now retired, taught me more than even I learned as a reporter. It gave me that perspective. And so watching what is going on today both makes me shiver. And I also understand the need of a society, the right of a society to enforce its laws. And so this is one of those schisms that makes you wonder, you know, is this who we are as a society? Is the way that we want to go? Do we have a right to do it? Do we have a right to go into homes? We do. Is that what we want to do? Is that what we're about? And is this the beginning of something far more sinister? That's the question that we all have to ask. So if we're going to go ahead and do it, we better be aware that this is also not far from a model that is that has been used in totalitarian societies and is very close. It's easy to see in today's landscape lots of parallels between where we're headed as a society and the Stasi.
Mm. You know, this is the first time we've had you on the phone in a while, and there's just been so much going on this whole issue with Mexico and immigration. Generally, what is the feeling right now in Mexico toward the Americans on this whole thing?
Empathy, and I would say even camaraderie. And Mexico has its own skeletons to address. I'm not really pro-Mexico on this issue. Mexico, if you look at the entire society, it's very homogenous. The country has not opened its arms. It has a history of opening its arms in little areas and to Argentines, to Chileans. World War II, it opened. There's a lot of Jews and a lot of people who fled Europe at that time, but the numbers were not massive. And Mexico it's funny because it actually needs its own immigration policy. It's a very quickly gentrifying society, a la Korea or Japan. Mexico as a country is not reproducing. It's below zero birth control, which is, you know, one of those things. So Mexico herself needs to have some kind of immigration policy as well. You do not see black people in Mexico. You do not see Muslims. You do not see any of the richness of the immigrant society that we have in the U.S. And you have a very tightly controlled, it's called the Secretary of Gobernación, which is their interior ministry, that oversees everything having to do with immigration, the southern border, the northern border. To your question, the Mexicans see themselves as probably finally playing a role that they ought to do. And so Mexico is going to be a repository, and it should be, for Central Americans who are being rejected to the U.S. It's unfair, just to my way of thinking, to simply wholesale send people back to El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, or anywhere else in South America. And I think in a certain way, Mexico's lack of having been a leader or militant on this issue is coming home to them. So you now have Tijuana, Juarez, Mexicali, and now San Luis Rio Colorado, not yet Nogales, by the way, when it comes to cities that are going to be repositories for Central Americans. So there's a kind of a bill coming due for Mexico and its lack of policy, but I think the Mexicans are ready now to pull their weight. And I think if you go door to door, person to person, you'll find that people agree with the López Obrador policy, which is to say, you know what, the United States might be bullying us a little bit, but we ought to be doing this anyhow.
When President Trump postponed the tariffs, there was a lot of talk that some of these agreements had already been worked out. What's your take on that, Keith Rosenblum?
Keith Rosenblum thinks that the tariffs and immigration policy ought not to have been mixed. Those are two separate tangents between two sovereign nations. And number one, I'm not a believer in the tariffs anyway. Everybody's a loser when you have tariffs. And it doesn't take going farther back than 1930 and Smoot-Hawley to realize that they aren't. That all tariffs do is to distort your economy. You tax one part of the economy, and then you've got money to artificially subsidize another part of the economy. So it's a losing proposition to begin with. Then for us to allow a president or Congress, for that matter, to link people make investments all the time in countries with huge amounts of infrastructure based on what the economy is at that moment in time. And there's a lot of people who are on pensions in the U.S. or who have retired or who are in Green Valley whose livelihoods and now whose pensions have come to fruition based on that economic rationale. If you summarily tax things 10 or 20 or 30% to someone that's just invested their life savings in Mexico in a plant, what have you done except for to have penalized them and taught them that you can't count. The United States' word is not its word. And that's the danger of the tariff. So to me, the two issues ought never have been intertwined. They were, at least for the time being, things were looking good anyway. We managed to have circumvented a crisis. Mexico is going to pull its weight in terms of, and then they may end up with some uncomfortable looking refugee camps. Who knows what's going to appear. Jesus Puyol, who's the mayor of Nogales, had an idea that a lot of people are looking at, and that is why not allow Central Americans to occupy and to restore, they're called casas de interés social. Those are homes that have been built for the Mexican lower classes and done under government subsidies. And there's a lot of them that are actually empty. And so, you know what, this could be a kind of a relocation program. Maybe it'll be temporary while people's visas are considered in the U.S. You might also end up with a whole world of people, as you did during World War II, that say, you know what, Mexico's may not be the United States, but it sure isn't as bad as being in Guatemala. Mexico is a peaceful country. Gang violence exists, but it's really limited to the people who are in the drug or human trafficking business themselves. So if you're not in either one, you can live a very peaceful and prosperous life. Nope, it's not the United States of America, but it sure ain't the same things as the slums of San Salvador.
Could the labor shortage, you had said earlier that Mexico, the folks were just not, what did you say, zero?
They're not reproducing, Bill.
Huh?
They are not reproducing. I say the Mexicans are not reproducing.
Okay.
And they are desperately, they have a, when I first started going to Mexico in the late 70s, I had to hunt to find somebody over 70. At that time, 1 in 20 Mexicans were over 70. And in 2045, if the demographic, the fertility rate continues the way it is, 1 in 4 Mexicans will be over 70.
Wow, I had not heard that.
You've heard it here. Yeah. Oh, and that's what's so stunning about it. So if you don't think that Mexico herself needs to have some influx of people, that all of a sudden these families that had 7, 8, 9 kids, and it was easy enough for one or two of them to alternate in and out of mom and dad's house, or the other way around, have mom or dad come into your house, guess what? That ratio is going to be like that. The new families, there's 1 in 2 or 3 people to do it. Guess what? You're going to need to have age-segregated housing the same way we do. You're going to have green valleys. Mm. Keep focusing on green valley. but you'll have a setup very similar to what we have in the U.S. If the U.S. didn't have immigrant population, our birth, we're below zero population growth as well as a society. Exclude our native-born population. Include our native-born population. American society is below zero population growth. We are not reproducing. If it weren't for our immigrant population, we'd be below zero.
Wow. All right. That's why I do this show, to learn something every day. Keith Rosenblum, always a pleasure. Thank you, Keith. Hope you have a great week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Keith Rosenblum is the Buckmaster Show contributor on Mexico. It's 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. I'm Bill Buckmaster on behalf of my fine engineer-producer, Bob Dio. We hope you have a great afternoon. And Jennifer English, Around the Table, that show coming up next on KVOI 10:30, The Voice. Have a great afternoon and evening.